Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, chapter 10. Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. Sri Shuka Uvacha,
Sri Shuka Uvacha,
Atra,
Atra,
Sargo,
Sargo,
Sargascha,
Sargascha,
Sthanam,
Sthanam,
Oshanam,
Oshanam,
Bhutaya,
Bhutaya,
Manvantara, Manvantara,
Manvantara,
Ishanukata,
Ishanukata,
Nirodha,
Nirodha,
Muktir,
Muktir,
Ashrayaha,
Ashrayaha,
Sri Shukuvacha,
Sri Shukuvacha,
Atrasargo Visargascha,
Atrasargo Visargascha,
Sthanam Poshanam Uttayaha,
Sthanam Poshanam Uttayaha,
Manvantareshvanukata,
Manvantareshvanukata,
Nirodho Muktirashayaha,
Nirodho Muktirashayaha,
Sri Shukuvacha,
Sri Shukuvacha,
Atrasargo Visargascha,
Atrasargo Visargascha,
Sthanam Poshanam Uttayaha,
Sthanam Poshanam Uttayaha,
Manvantareshvanukata,
Manvantareshvanukata,
Nirodho Muktirashayaha,
Nirodho Muktirashayaha.
Atrasargo Visargascha,
Sthanam Poshanam Uttayaha,
Manvantareshvanukata,
Nirodho Muktirashrayaha.
Sri
Shuka Uvacha,
Atrasargo Visargascha,
Atrasargo Visargascha,
Sthanam Poshanam Uttayaha,
Sthanam Poshanam Uttayaha,
Manvantareshvanukata,
Manvantareshvanukata,
Nirodho Muktirashrayaha,
Nirodho Muktirashrayaha.
Sri
Shuka Uvacha, Atrasargo Visargascha, Sthanam Poshanam Uttayaha, Manvantareshvanukata, Nirodho Muktirashrayaha.
Sri Shuka Uvacha,
Atrasargo Visargascha,
Shri Shuk Govacha.
Sri
Sukadeva Goswami said.
Atra.
In this Srimad Bhagavatam.
Saragaha.
Statement of the creation.
Of the universe.
Visargaha.
Statement of sub-creation.
Ja.
Also.
Sthanam,
the planetary system.
Poshanam,
protection.
Utayaha,
the creative impetus.
Manvantara,
changes of
mothers.
Isha Anukata,
the science of God.
Nirodha,
going back home, back to God.
Muktihi,
liberation.
Ashraya,
the summum bonum.
Sri
Shukadeva Goswami said, in the Srimad Bhagavatam there are 10 divisions of statements regarding the following: the creation of the universe, sub-creation, planetary systems, protection by the Lord, the creative impetus, the change of manus, the science of God, returning home back to Godhead, liberation, and the summum bonum. And there's no proof.
Dashamasya vishujartam navanami halakshanam marayanti mahatmaha shrutenartena chandrasa.
To isolate the transcendence of the summum bonum, the symptoms of the rest are described, sometimes by Vedic inference, sometimes by direct explanation, and sometimes by summary explanations given by the great sages.
Om jnana timirantasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshur miditam jena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manopistam sthapitam jena bhutale svayam rupa kadamayam tathati Vandeham Sri Guru, Sri Tathagata Kamalam, Sri Guru Vaishnavamscha, Sri Rupam Sagarshatam, Sagana Raghunatam, Pitam Stam Sajivam, Sadvaitam, Savatutam, Parijana Sahitam, Krishna Chaitanya Devam, Sri Radha Krishna Padam, Shahadana Dalita, Sri Vishakam Vitamstra. He Krishna Karuna Sindha, Dhinamadam Gojagatpate, Gopesha Gopika Kanta, Radha Kanta Moshkite, Tavda Kamshana Gaurangi, Radhe Vrindavan. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasudevi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Earlier, at the end of the previous chapter, Sukadeva Goswami said that he would speak about Puranam Dashalakshanam. This Srimad Bhagavatam, which has 10 characteristics. Puranam Dashalakshanam. So now, in the first verse, he tells what those 10 topics are in Srimad Bhagavatam. Atra, here in this Purana, there are these topics: Sarga, Visarga, Sthanam, Poshanam, Uptayaha, Manvantara, Ishanukata, Nirodha, Mukti, and Ashray. These are the 10 subject matters found in Srimad Bhagavatam. And the Sukadeva Goswami explains his strategy, his expository strategy, how he's going to go about explaining things. Dashamasya Vishuddhyartham. He intends to isolate the 10th topic by describing the 9 other topics. Something like neti neti, not this, not that. Process of elimination. It's not green, it's not yellow, it's not blue, it's not black. Or we get, what is that? It's not red, it's not black, it's not white, therefore he must be yellow. Because there are only 4 colors for the yuga avatars. So the black ones already come, the white ones already come, red ones already come, therefore this one must be the yellow one. So in that way we isolate this one by ruling out the other 3. So here it's the same process, Vishuddhyartham. We're going to isolate this topic by describing Navanam of the other 9 topics, Eva Lakshana. Varnayanti Mahatman, as described by the great souls. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, practically everything is a description of what other great souls have said. Sometimes we go 3 or 4 layers deep. My dear king, this question was placed by such and such, who referred to the discussion by such and such. And then maybe it goes one more time down. So it's as described by the great sages, Maitreya, Vidura, and so many sages will be referred to here, Kumaras, many different Rishabdev, Vyasdev, Narad Muni. So Mahatma, they're all Mahatmas, great devotees, and they'll speak about these topics. Or Sukadeva Goswami will relate what they've said. Shrutena Artena Chandrasa. Sometimes it will be by direct reference to Vedic literature, Vedas, Vedic statements. And sometimes it will be by summary explanations or by illustrative histories, illustrative narratives that amplify or clarify the Vedic message. But now that he's described these, or he's mentioned, he's listed these 10 topics. And of course the point is to get to the 10th. We want to know the other 9 categories, but the focus of the work is the 10th category. Ashraya, the Supreme Personality of God. That's the target of the work. But to understand the Ashraya properly, we should understand the other categories also. Finally, all the other categories rest upon this final category. Every category rests on this final category, the personality of the God, of God. Material energy, the spiritual energy, they're described as ashvatatattva, that which is dependent, that which takes shelter, and ashraya, that which gives shelter. You have a creeper, lata, so it has to take shelter. And then you have a trellis, a string, a post, a tree, around which the creeper wraps itself, so that object gives shelter. So ultimately Krishna is the shelter of everything, all energies, all categories, ashrita-tattva, and everything else is ashrita, taking shelter of Krishna. And now that Sukadeva Goswami has listed these topics, he's going to define each one of them in the subsequent verses. Very briefly, he'll give a terse definition of what each of these is, and of course he'll describe them all in further detail in the course of the text. Bhutamachandriya dhinam janma sarga vidahataha brahmano guna vaishamya visarga pohushasmataha. The elementary creation of 16 items of matter, namely the five elements, fire, water, land, air, and sky, sound, form, taste, smell, touch, and the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, skin, and mind is known as sarga, whereas subsequent resultant interaction of the modes of material nature is called visarga. In order to explain the 10 divisional symptoms of the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are 7 continuous verses. The first of these under reference pertains to the 16 elementary manifestations of earth, water, etc., the material ego composed of material intelligence and mind. The subsequent creation is a result of the reactions of the above-mentioned 16 energies of the first Purusha, the Mahavishnu incarnation of Govinda, as later explained by Brahma in his treatise, Brahma Samhita, as follows. Yakaranar namajale pajati smayoga nidramananta jagadanda saroma kupaha adhara shaktim avadamya param samurtim govindamari purusham tamaham pajami. The first Purusha incarnation of Govinda, Lord Krishna, known as the Mahavishnu, goes into a yoga nidra, mystic sleep, and the innumerable universes are situated in potency in each and every hair hole of his transcendental body. As mentioned in the previous verse, Shrutena, or with reference to the Vedic conclusions, the creation is made possible from the Supreme Personality of Godhead directly by manifestation of his particular energies. Without such a Vedic reference, the creation appears to be a product of material nature. This conclusion comes from a poor fund of knowledge. From Vedic reference, it is concluded that the origin of all energies, namely internal, external, and marginal, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. as explained here and before, the illusory conclusion is that creation is made by the inert material nature. The Vedic conclusion is transcendental light, whereas the non-Vedic conclusion is material darkness. The internal potency of the Supreme Lord is identical with the Supreme Lord, and the external potency is enlivened in contact with the internal potency. The parts and parcels of the internal potency, which react in contact with the external potency, are called the marginal potency, or the living entities. Thus, the original creation is directly from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or Parabrahma, and the secondary creation as a reactionary result of the marginal ingredients of the original ingredients is made by Brahma. Thus, the activities of the whole universe are started. By the way, if you haven't checked your cell phone, please check that it's off or silent. So, atra sarva sarvascha. Now sarva is first described. Bhukta matrendriya dhyam. Janma sarva udaya. Sarva means creation. The creation done by the personality of God. What is that creation? He simply expands the material elements or manifests the material elements. And they're described here. Bhuta, Panchamahabhuta, earth, water, fire, air, ether. Matra, the sense objects. Form, taste, sound, and so on, that which our senses perceive, and indriya, the senses themselves. Yes. Eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and so on. And dhyan, the mind and intelligence. Well, these are the elements. They're described in Sankhya philosophy. They're elaborately what Gilbert will describe what each of these elements is. In the Bhagavad Gita, in the 13th chapter, they're summarized as being kshetra, the field of activities. Field of activity. So this is all created by Lord Vishnu. He's simply sleeping. Sometimes there's an expression in English that, you know, this is so easy I could do it in my sleep. Or either that, or he's so expert he could do it in his sleep. So here, it's literally so that Mahavishnu is sleeping, and while sleeping he's creating the ingredients for the universe. People have the idea that God is, you know, by some mighty endeavor, he creates the world. But from Srimad Bhagavatam, we find out that he literally does it in his sleep. He's in yoga nidra, in mystic trance, mystic sleep. And while he's sleeping, the universe is simply coming out like bubbles from the follicles of his skin, the air holes. Then, the next thing comes, Visarga. Visarga means sub-creation, or elaborating, taking the basic elements and making something out of them. Building the creation. Assembling the constituent parts. That's done by Lord Brahma. Just as one might bring all sorts of material, building material, on site, and then hand it over to a contractor and say, okay, it's all here, make the building. So Lord Vishnu supplies all the ingredients of the cosmic manifestation. And Lord Brahma assembles them or makes something out of them. That's his job, Visarga. Visarga is within the jurisdiction of Lord Brahma. Particularly, Lord Brahma creates the bodies of the living entities who are going to react or interact with material nature. Here, Srila Prabhupada makes the point that creation arises from the Supreme Personality of God. Not that material nature simply does everything itself. Those with a poor fund of knowledge conclude that material nature does everything automatically, which is to some extent true, but it works automatically under the direction of the Personality of God. Maya Jakshena Prakriti Suyate Satyaratra. Under the supervision of the Personality of God, material nature is working. Otherwise, material nature is inert. Etunane Kamtea Jagati Paripatita. Material nature is going on for a purpose and with a cause. Not that for no reason. For no ultimate reason whatsoever, the elements of material nature are somehow self-assembling themselves into sophisticated structures, including structures so sophisticated that they exhibit the signs of life. That's the material theory. Material nature is so smart that she self-assembles all and everything that we see, including life itself. Now, this is rejected by all the Vedic authorities. Material nature is certainly capable, but activating material nature is done by the Personality of God. Otherwise, nature has no reason to elaborate herself in this way. There should be a reason for everything. That's science. Science looks for reasons. So why has this happened? Why did this explode? Why did this happen this way or that way? Why did the mountains form in such and such a way? It looks for reasons. Or intelligent human beings look for reasons for things. They ask, why? Why did this happen? Why? Where from? So there's some purpose. Why all of this sophistication? Why we don't have material nature just as one immense lump? Now, given all of these constituent parts that make up material nature, whether you do the inventory according to the Vedic
categories or you use some other inventory system. There's all this stuff that nature basically consists of. You know, some chemicals, if you want to call them chemicals, and list them according to a periodic table. But why do these chemicals elaborated themselves into such sophisticated forms? DNA is considered a sophisticated form. Why all the trouble? Why all the fanciness? Why not just sit there and be happy as a batch of chemicals in a periodic, not in a periodic table, but capable of description by a periodic table? Why all the variety? Why all the complexity? Why should something simple elaborate itself into something complex? There should be some purpose. There should be some purpose. Not just, well, it just does. That's no explanation. There should be a reason. So the reason is described in the Vedic literature that there are different living entities with different desires and different results that are meant to come to them. And so the material nature is working specifically to interact with the living entities. Without the presence of the living entities, there's no need for material nature. And without the supreme living entity, there'd be no action by material nature. In our experience, the ordinary machines work in interaction with consciousness, with the living entity. So the same principle holds when we come to the supreme living entity. By the direction of the personality of content. And the Visarga is also done by the direction of the personality of God. And what is that? Also from the Samhita. Jagadanda Sarvam.
Yasyaikanishvasitakalam.
That we just read. Yasyaikanishvasitakalam. Jivantilalam.
Jagadanda Natha. Vishnu Mahan.
Yes, that's not the verse I'm thinking of. As light is reflected in different kinds of jewels. So the light of the personality of God is partly manifest by Jagadanda Nata, the plural number Brahmas, Brahma Yesha Jagadanda Vitara. The Brahmas are there as the lords of the universe, and they're working under the direction of Lord Vishnu. Yeah, that's right. You were right. Mine was right too. The Shakti Jivanti Loma Vilajati. Jivanti Loma Vilajati. The Avishnu, the universes are coming out. And then the Jagadanda Nata, the Brahmas are born. So the Brahmas, we sometimes hear, especially in the West, the God of creation, the God of destruction, and the God of maintenance. Brahma, Vishnu, Brahma, Shiva, and Vishnu. But Brahma and Shiva are doing their work under the direction of the personality of God, Vishnu, who's the plenary just being mentioned, just being this Buddha briefly defined here in this last chapter of the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Some questions? You're close, okay.
So
I think I have to switch it up.
I'm right here.
Yes, they're in the way down there.
So the
okay, well, they're getting ready. You're loud also, you speak loud.
The living entity is described as in a dreaming state in the material world. So Mahavishnu is also doing everything as sleep. So can we consider then the material world, also because it's temporary, can we consider that he's dreaming about this whole?
Yeah, the material world is just the dream of Mahavishnu. He's doing everything in his sleep, and we're doing everything in our sleep. But he's doing everything perfectly, and we're messing everything up. It's described what it's like to some extent in Vidabhagavata when Gokumar goes through these various covenants. It doesn't seem a lot like our experience.
Thank you so much. Maharaj, here in Supreme Goswami, when he's explaining the 16 elements.
When
Sukadeva Goswami is explaining the 16 elements of Visarga, he is telling the 5 Mahabhutas.
Not Visarga, that's Visarga.
So at the end he is telling Dhyam, that is like Prabhupada translates. At the end, the 16th element, Sukadeva Goswami tells Dhyam, that Prabhupada translates as mind. But there is no reference of false ego or intelligence.
Right.
So,
I assume that it comprehends both. Sometimes mind means mana, and sometimes we speak of all three, mind, intelligence, and ego, as being mind. In a general But Prabhupada, how does he take it here? Mind. But then he speaks elsewhere as elsewhere he speaks of it as including false ego, right? Yeah. With material ego composed of material intelligence and mind. So dhyā. Dhyā literally means how you think of things, right? Thinking power. So mind, intelligence, and the nasty false ego that works behind you all.
So this is one word you put on the
dhyā.
The young word is used.
It appears to be that way. Prabhupada seems to gloss it that way. And we know that if you're going to give a complete description of the elements provided by the Lord as constituents of the material energy, and it is going to include mind, intelligence, and false ego. When you do the counting, Sankhya, when you count them all out, you're going to find there's mind, there's intelligence, there's false ego. We're just getting a summary description here. Bhuta, mantra, indriya, dhyana. It's four items. But those four items are going to become like 26. They're going to be elaborated as 26 items in the Sankhya philosophy. It explains them more fully.
Another question is that the sarva creation.
The what?
The sarva creation, but sarva.
Sarva. Sarva creation. Yes.
So, is it like the only the layers that we have explained in the Brahma Samhita? Or when we say explanation of the universe, the different layers.
You've got some. Three things working against you. Bad acoustics. Three things. That you're speaking fast, and that you've got a very interesting Indian accent. When you put all of those three together, the result is that I get about 50% of what you say. You can't do much about the acoustics. You've got an Indian accent. So the third thing, though, you can do something about it. You can speak slower. Okay? And you can speak slowly and clearly. That will also help. Go ahead.
In the sarva creation and the visarga creation, so all the planets and the planetary systems that are created, are they created by Brahmaji or...
Yeah, Brahma expands the rest. The machinery of the universe is all Brahma's business.
In the sarva creation, only the elements are there.
Yeah, in sarva there's no sun, moon, stars, Venus, Pluto, all that stuff. Just ingredients. That's all you get. You get a crate of earth, a crate of water, a crate of big pallets of earth. But essentially, you get the raw ingredients. That's all you get. And then the work of elaborating that into planetary systems and all of this, that's done by them.
Mm-hmm.
Can you ask something off topic? No. Let people have questions on topic. That's good.
So on topic, like learning this knowledge of understanding the different elements and the creation, sometimes it is very difficult to understand. So how to understand this as a pure devotional service?
How to understand?
As a pure devotional service in our practical life, we know this knowledge.
How is this knowledge relevant?
How is it going to help you?
Yeah.
You'll know something about Krishna. from the beginning, Prabhupada's really making the essential point that it's not just matter doing its thing independently. It's not that matter is so independently powerful that it just does everything, including create life. The basic misconception of modern knowledge. Their knowledge is darkness. They're in the dark. They're thinking that, what am I? I'm a product of nature. Totally wrong. They're thinking that I'm nothing more than this combination of elements. I am this body. That's their essential philosophy, really, when you get down to it. I am this body. I am matter. And there is nothing else but matter. I'm just one manifestation of matter, one display of matter. That's their philosophy. And we have to understand that, first of all, matter doesn't work by itself. It's not that there's nothing but matter, nothing but nature. There's the controller of nature, the intelligence behind nature. And second of all, I'm not a product even of that nature. Only my body is a product of that nature. You know, I'm spirit, soul, I'm the marginal energy, I'm not the inferior energy. That I have to understand. It's exceedingly necessary to know these things.
If somebody goes more in detail knowledge, sometimes he may not understand such a knowledge.
If someone goes detailed,
he may not understand something, no?
He may not understand. Brahma told, Lord Sukadeva Goswami told Prithvi Maharaj, you'll never understand all this. I'm going to explain to you the planetary systems and how they're situated, but even if you have the light of Lord Brahma, you would not be able to fully comprehend it. The purpose of this enterprise is not to have complete knowledge, to be omniscient, or to know everything in full detail. That's not possible. Even Brahma doesn't have that extent of knowledge. But at least to get a grounding in the subject matter, not to be totally in the dark, not to have it all backwards, to some extent, to be able to understand. Whoever wants to speak and whoever has a microphone, it's all right with me.
Prabhupada has given this 10th canto, the Krishna book, but you also have said this in many of his purports.
Your view is
you also emphasize this for many of his purports to go through the 9 cantos to reach the 10th canto. So, is there a prerequisite something which you should learn before we actually go through the Krishna book also?
No, you can pick it up and read it. There's no prerequisite. You can't read it. We won't let you read this book until you do something. If you're an outsider, there's a prerequisite. You have to get the book. So we try to fulfill that prerequisite for them by distributing books, Krishna books, so that they can read. But we already have it, so all we have to do is pick it up and read it. And Srila Prabhupada has written it in such a way that you get the necessary background in the course of reading.
And when creation is done, sarga visarga, then living entities are going inside by Vishnu. So they come from spiritual world. So how we can call them as Nityabadha or Nityasubha?
Oh, bad question. At the time of creation, they don't come from the spiritual world. not that when it's time for the universe, when it's time for Mahavishnu to exhale, he inhales, so living at the beginning. They're already there within his body. Because when he inhaled last time and all the universes were destroyed, those living entities were absorbed within the body of Mahavishnu. Now he's going to exhale, and all these universes are going to come out, and those living entities are going to come out again. And he's going to inhale again, and for the next 4,300,000 times 2 times 12 times 30 times 100 years, they're going to be in his body again. And then they're going to come out again, and they're going to go in again. So that's been going on since longer than anyone can trace, and therefore they're called the Jivanta. Okay. There's a question way back there.
Hare Krishna. When the list of the material elements here.
Just the first couple of words. Start again.
Just as there is a list of material elements given here.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, 13th chapter, verses 6 and 7, Krishna gives a list and of what constitutes material nature and its transformations.
Mm-hmm.
So there, 13.7, he includes consciousness, Chaitanya, as one of the transformations of material nature.
Mm-hmm.
So, how do they understand this? Normally,
Chaitanya, Sukham, Dukham, a whole bunch of stuff that we would not consider to be elements of material nature. Not only Chaitanya. Ichcha, Dvesha, Sukham, Dukham, Sankhata, Chaitanya, Chitihi. Ichcha, desire, dvesha,
aversion,
sukham, dukham, happiness and distress, sankhata, a whole batch of stuff together, chaitana, consciousness, vidhi, determination. These are described as interactions of the elements that went before. Of course, none of these interactions don't take place without the presence of the living being. But it means that these are subtle transformations of material nature. You know, we identify ourselves with our emotions. In the Western psychology, Western popular psychology, there's this notion of getting in touch with oneself, getting in touch with one's feelings. And people identify with, you know, I'm not just what I appear to be. I have all these feelings within me, and these feelings are what I really am. I'm the sum total of my desires and my experiences and my blah 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 blah. So all this stuff really is arising from transformations of material energy. They're not native to the spirit soul. The spirit soul does have desire, does have determination, does have, but that's not what's being indicated here.
Initially.
Yeah, these are the desires that have come up by contact with material nature. This is the determination to enjoy the material world. This is the happiness and distress that comes from being able to fulfill my illusory desires or being frustrated in my illusory desires. Now this is all the subtle, these are the subtle forces within the prison of material nature. Just like a prison, it has walls, and then it has, you know, other things that keep you in there. It's bars, or if you had a high-tech prison, you know, maybe there'd be force fields, or there'd be something that you couldn't get past. Electrical wires are subtle because they're not just wire. There's force going through those wires, and if you touch the wires, then there's a problem. Like you die. So there's the gross stuff, you know, the iron bars, the bricks, and then there's the more subtle things, electrical energy, and I'm sure, well, even, you know, if you go to some prisons and they do things to your mind, you know, there's chemicals injected into you and so on, which are more sophisticated forms of prison imprisonment. So, in material nature, there's the body, which already imprisons me. But then there's the other things. Desire furthers my imprisonment. I stay in this material world, not just because I'm trapped inside the body, but because I like it. Or I like some of it, or I like enough of it to say, there's still something here for me. And her name is? Whatever her name happens to be, Reka or something else. Desire is there because I want to enjoy it. I have to stay here. And because I'm averse to something else, I don't like it. It doesn't suit my sense gratification. The aversion pushes me toward in another direction, someplace else in the material world. I don't like it here, I want to go there. So between the two of them, I don't want to be here, I want to be there. You go on vacation for two reasons. One, it's so beautiful in Paris. Number two, I want to get out of Bombay. So it's desire and aversion. It's desire and aversion. So all of these things, ischa, dvesha, sukham, dukham, sampatas, jeta, they're all subtle transformations that come from our contact with the gross. Is that okay? There's something here. Okay, this is not an on-topic question. Is there another on-topic question? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you very much for your lecture. I have a question, since you said that we hear these two terms, Nitya Bhatta and Nitya Bhatta, which is eternally liberated and eternally bound, that way it should go. So the way you explained that Nitya Bhatta, if it means that eternally liberated means they are never entangled, then eternally liberated also should mean that they are free, as you have explained. So, when the Lord says that you can come back to me through devotional service, how do we reconcile these apparent contradictions of both being called as eternally liberated and eternally bound? And
we're in trouble with time.
If devotional service is the means to go back, we become free, then why are we called eternally bound?
Because we're in trouble with time here. Because time is something foreign to our nature. It's foreign to the spiritual world. In the spiritual world, there is no time. There is no past, present, and future in the spiritual world. There's only existence without those divisions. And the material world is totally controlled by time. Everything is under past, present, future. So when we try to understand the spiritual world in terms of our categories of time, the result is confusion. You see the world through a prism, and then you know, you see your mother in 17 different colors. Why? Because you're looking through a prism. So we're looking at everything through our concept of time, our experience of past, present, and future. And then we're applying it to a jurisdiction where past, present, and future don't exist. The spiritual world. And then we're contrasting that to the material world, and we're trying to work with this term nitya, eternally, which refers to something practically beyond our experience. We have no experience of beyond, of no beginning, no end. Everything for us has a beginning and an end. We have some idea that practically by inference or by Vedic information that there's a spirit soul and that spirit soul is eternal. But it's not exactly by our experience, because we're not experiencing that I never had a beginning, I never had an end. We experience that today is my such and such birthday, and so many years ago I look on my passport or my driver's license that I see when I came into existence. So we're trying to stretch our minds to an area where our minds don't stretch very well. And therefore we're in difficulty. We understand how could one ever become liberated if the liberated soul is eternally liberated? How could you ever become nitya mukta? Because you have to always have been. That's the kind of paradox you wind up in. Prabhupada explains that by saying that actually we are eternally liberated, but we're under the cloud of Maya, thinking of ourselves as something else. In other words, our natural position is to be eternally liberated. And by confusion, I'm dreaming. I'm imagining something. I'm actually the head of, I'm actually the president of India, but now I'm asleep and I'm dreaming that I'm something other than the president of India. It doesn't mean that I'm not the president of India, but in my dream, I've become a washerwoman, or I've become any one of a million different things. And when I wake up, I'm the president of India. Or I'm the secretary of the president of India, or whatever I am. Actually, I'm the eternal servant of Krishna, but I'm imagining I'm something else. Actually, I'm eternal. I'm imagining I'm something else. Actually, I have no connection with material nature, and I'm imagining I have a connection. Asamgohiyampuja. I have nothing to do with material nature, and yet I'm imagining that I do. If I have nothing to do with material nature, I have nothing to do with this body. I have nothing to do with birth and death. I have nothing to do with anything that's going on in this material world, but I'm imagining it. That's described in Srimad Bhagavatam. My position is like that of a person seeing his head cut off in a dream. The teacher tells the student, you don't behave, cut off your head and nail it to the wall for you to see. But if the student were to think about it, well, if I can see my head, it's okay. Well, I must be all right. I don't have a problem. So our position is like that of a person seeing his head cut off in a dream. That means actually I'm, by nature, a sangha. I have no connection to this material nature. But I'm imagining that. So that imagination has to stop. Then what is nature? Mm-hmm.
I have a question. Maharaj, there are the two different paradigms. One is, when I read the section of Kapila, Kapila describes the living entity like a jantu, like a creature.
as
creature.
Jantu.
Jantu, you know, having a conglomeration of 24 elements with the nine holes, you know, in this body, and how it suffers in this world and everything. After reading that section and also after reading Forest of Material Enjoyment.
Really?
Forest of Material Enjoyment. These chapters, you know, after reading them, it gave a great sense of detachment from this world. And also reading the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, you know, it talks about the conglomeration of material elements, Sangata, everything. So, like yesterday you were telling us that all the activities of the world seem very silly. They seem very silly. So, on one hand, I felt great joy that the knowledge is so enlightening and uplifting. You know, it makes me understand that the whole material world is like a foolish play or a game. On the other hand, whenever devotees talk about their birthday, you know, birthday celebration or something, somebody says, "It's my birthday today." You know, I don't feel any feelings at all. You know. I feel, what is his birthday or death day? Similarly, if some Vaishnavas pass away, you know, it appears to me that, you know, what has happened after all, the soul has left and gone to another body. You know, it's not a very big deal. It appears like that. So, one paradigm is from understanding this element. From another paradigm, the Vaishnava sentiments and emotions are very important in the Vaishnava service. So, people feel that you don't have any feelings for Vaishnavas. You know, on the birthday or any such day. So how do we make a balance between them?
Our feelings and their feelings are different. The feelings of the materialist are almost exclusively in relation to the body and the mind. So the birthday is like, and not only your birthday, you can forget your own birthday, but your mother's birthday, and somebody else's birthday, and you forgot my birthday. And so these are important. And wedding anniversaries, and all of these things, very important. Because it's all in relation to the body. For the devotee, as you said, my birthday is not very important. Krishna's birthday is important. That's when we have a big festival. Krishna's birthday is important. So we don't attach the same importance to these physical events, physical markers, physical causes of celebration, and so on. But that doesn't mean we have no sentiment. Our sentiment, first of all, is directed toward Krishna. Their sentiment is directed toward their wife, their children, their puppy dog, their country, their community, these things, with which they have no eternal relationship. So all their sentiment is invested in those things. Or their sentiment is invested in fiction. You know, they watch a movie, they read a novel, and all of their emotions are going over someone who doesn't exist in any sense of the term. Some combination of pixels, some assortment of words emanating from someone's imagination, but they're absorbed in reading about that and experiencing emotions about what they read, even though it's imaginary. And what they read in the newspaper is imaginary, really. Sometimes it's also made up by the different news agencies, or by the time they've finished with it, it's as good as fiction. But even if it's an accurate account, what does it have to do with me, ultimately? When people read and they say, oh, it's terrible, 80 people died in a plane crash. And the devotee reads it, dearest Arjuna Murti, and as you said, so what? They change their body. So we don't invest our emotions in fiction, or in the events of the material world. But it doesn't mean we have no emotion. Emotion is directed toward Krishna. We're interested in developing our loving relationship with Krishna. We're there not experiencing emotion. When it comes to talk about God, they experience some emotion also. Please leave me alone. I'm not interested. That's their emotion. I told you to leave me alone. Okay, I'm not interested. But the devotee is very interested in Krishna, and his emotions are in relationship to Krishna, and then in those who are related to Krishna. And even then, he doesn't lament over the bodily state of affairs. Just because a devotee broke his leg, well, we're concerned, but we know that it's just the external body of the devotee. The devotee is going to live under any circumstances. But in relationship to Krishna, especially when there's separation from a devotee, we feel that that association in Krishna consciousness is no longer physically available, so we're experiencing that. And on the other side, you know, when a person has gone back to Krishna, or he's traveled onward in his journey toward Krishna. So, the same, therefore, there's mixed happiness and distress for the devotee in relationship to Krishna. Okay.
Maharaj, did Prabhupada attach any importance to birthdays or such days?
Birthdays of the great acharyas? Those birthdays. That's it. We never celebrated Gandhiji's birthday. We give importance to the birthdays or appearance days of the acharyas. Now, Prabhupada existed in the conventional world, so he would be capable of, although no instance comes to mind, congratulating someone on the birthday, you know. Oh, he observed the birthday, in fact, of Gandhiji, and he wrote about it. That George Bernard Shaw had wished that it was Gandhiji's, like, 30th birthday instead of his 60th birthday. And Prabhupada, you just used that as an opportunity to comment on everyone's desire to live longer, live for another 100 years. Unfortunately, despite George Bernard Shaw's wishful desire to subtract so many years from the life of Mahatma Gandhi, everyone has to go on getting old and finally die. So there Prabhupada noticed Gandhi's birthday. But he couldn't notice someone else's birthday. Conventionally, you have the house of Saliar Bhuval, he could have wished her a happy birthday or something like that. It's not that a devotee. I don't care if it's your birthday. I don't want to hear about it. It's Maya. We saw that in Central Park in New York City, Prabhupada was walking and with his devotees, and when someone would be coming the other way, Prabhupada would say, "Good morning." And the person would say, "Good morning." So, why is Prabhupada saying such a conventional thing? Why doesn't he say, "Well, at least Hare Krishna"? Because he's interacting with people conventionally, and by wishing him a good morning, you'll get spiritual progress. They're giving their best wishes to a devotee. So, they'll make progress that way. So Prabhupada, in the same spirit, could wish someone a happy birthday or any other such occasion. But it's only in relationship to Krishna. Even if when it's conventional, the pure devotee is seeing it in relationship to Krishna. So we can congratulate someone on their birthday, their wedding anniversary, their graduation from college, their promotion in their job, or whatever. But we're seeing it in relationship to Krishna.
Whereas when Mahavishnu inherits with the power of the universes, they destroy at a time or one after another. All the universes, they destroy at a time or they destroy one after another.
At the same time?
Or do they simultaneously absorb or is it sequentially absorbed? It's an interesting question because for Mahavishnu there's no time. I really don't know. Yeah, there's time to do it. But I really don't know. But let's consider the the temporal scale on which we're dealing here. It's almost like asking, when you breathe in, do you breathe in the air all at once? Or do you breathe it in, you know, a little bit, a little bit, a little bit, a little bit? That's what the whole thing is. It's one breath of Mahavishnu. There's that much time. Although for us it seems like millions and billions of years. For him it's one breath. So, you know, whether we're at the beginning of the breath or the end of the breath. It's not going to make a heck of a lot of difference. You're in the same dilemma. You're in the same trouble, no matter what. You know, whether you were when somebody built 20 prisons, whether you were put in the first one or the last one. Doesn't really affect your situation. Our business is to get out. Our business is to get out. That's our job.
One last question, okay? 2 minutes.
Pariksha, Maharaj, like Krishna explains many incarnations. And Lord Krishna expands many incarnations. And like we also many times go to many places of such incarnations, like South India.
Go through many stages of.
Many places of such. Where Lord appeared, like South
many
India.
Places of.
Yeah, Pandharpur and all. But going to like Vrindavan and Mayapur is more thrilling than going to such places. So, like, is it Maharaj sentimental attachment? Or we should be equally for all such places?
Well, it may be sentimental attachment, but even if you analyze it philosophically, Krishna is the complete form of Godhead, and therefore Vrindavan is the complete manifestation of Krishna's abode. Krishna is partially manifest as Ram, Shrinka, Brahma, Purva, and so on. And so his abode is partial, like a Ayodhya. Is partial manifestation of the opulence of Godhead. And Vrindavan is the full manifestation. So whether by sentiment or by philosophy you get to the same conclusion that Mayapur and Vrindavan are above all other times. Is that okay? Stop here.
That's right.
Okay. Thank you all very much.
Is that